Blog Talk Radio.
In the desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and thank you once again for taking out time from your busy schedule to join me on my program today. Lots of important stories on the program today. Going to feature an interview with a Bosnian journalist who had a very terrifying encounter with the so-called religion of peace, that is Islam, simply for posting something on her Facebook page in disagreement of that religion. Going to also talk about Narges Mohammadi, the human rights activist who was recently sentenced to 16 years in prison in Iran simply because she supports the death penalty and simply because she is a champion for human rights. Also on the program today, Annie Cyrus from Live Up to Freedom. An interview with her on the Daily Ledger. I'll be featuring that just a little bit later, and also a Bible teaching that will certainly inspire your faith. I want to begin today. I want to quote from one of my favorite Psalms. The Psalms are those Hebrew songs of praise and lament in the Old Testament, most of them written by David. And this morning, if you're facing very dark and difficult circumstances and you feel surrounded by chaos, and you feel just trapped and in fear, this psalm I'm about to read is for you. This is God's word, and God's word is powerful. It is sharper than any two-edged sword, that God sends his word to heal us and to set us free. I want you to hear Psalm number 3 this morning and see if this describes you. O Lord, I have so many enemies. So many are against me. So many are saying God will never rescue him. But you, O Lord, are a shield around me. You are my glory, the one who holds my head high. I cried out to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept, yet I woke up in safety, for the Lord was watching over me. I am not afraid of 10,000 enemies who surround me on every side. Arise, O Lord, rescue me, my God. Slap all my enemies in the face. shatter the teeth of the wicked. Victory comes from you, O Lord. May you bless your people. This is a psalm crying out to the Lord from David when he is surrounded by his enemies, in particular when his son was pursuing him, Absalom. And I wanted to share with you this psalm simply because these are words of encouragement and the promise of God to protect those who belong to him, those who are in fear, and those who are being surrounded by enemies, that there is true victory, true freedom, and true hope in Jesus. This is a psalm that really praises God for the victory. I want you to hear now this very short song, which is based on Psalm number 3. And as you listen to the music and words, begin to imagine, begin to picture that freedom, that rescue from our great God. Let's listen to a song right now based on Psalm 3, on the cross in the desert.
How are they, priests, that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many are they that say,
our great God is our refuge. He is our strength, just as that psalm, that beautiful psalm written by David, is expressing. Not too long ago, a Bosnian journalist on Facebook decided to give her opinion about an issue, and she posted something about the issue of the burqa or the hijab and the things that she saw in Islam that troubled her. And as a result, she faced a terrifying experience. And right now, I want to feature her story. I'm speaking of Leyla Kalak, and she lives in Bosnia. Her story was first featured on Annie Cyrus's Live Up to Freedom, and then recently on the Glasov Gang. There are actually two particular stories I want to feature. The first one is a shorter one. It's sharing her experience about what happened when she shared her opinion right on Facebook where she lives. I want you to hear Leyla's story right now on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
Hello, everyone. My name is Leyla Çolak, and I'm a journalist from Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina. On August 25th, on my private Facebook profile, I published a status in which I criticized public display of religion and wearing niqab and burqas. my private Facebook status got out and became public. And right after that, I started receiving death and rape threats from many Muslim people in my country, from some Muslim leaders, and even from one member of Bosnian Army. His name is Mirza Djidic, and he publicly called for my rape, offering money to anyone who is willing to rape me. People wrote that I should be pulled over with gas and set on fire, and right after that, run over with a car. I reached out to a friend as I was afraid for my safety and safety of my family. He sent my case to Live Up to Freedom, and I was contacted by Anis Cyrus, the founder. I have been transferred and taken to safety, please, with help of Live Up to Freedom and with help of everyone who donated to my rescue campaign. I would like to personally thank everyone who helped me to get to safety and continues to support me through this process. I am forever grateful, and I hope one day I can help a human in need as I was helped. Thank you so, so much for your help, and thank you so much for everything. With love and respect, Leila Cholak.
That was a story. That was Leila Cholak herself and reporting on this terrifying experience. She's just posted something in disagreement to the religion of Islam. The so-called religion of peace, as you hear many, many Muslims claim that for themselves, but obviously that's not true because of her, they threatened to run her over with a car, to burn her with gasoline. Even someone called for her rape and would pay that person. It's terrifying, and it's horrible that anyone should have to go through what Leila suffered through, and we're very thankful that Annie Cyrus of Live Up to Freedom and the Glasshoff Gang reached out to her, and she is now safe and very, very thankful and appreciative of them. Now, I want you to hear this second story as Leila begins to share her feelings openly about Islam, and she has every right. As a human being, she has the human rights to do this, and she should never have to be put in fear and be threatened like that. You see, because Sharia law, the very basis of Islam, doesn't allow for any opinions and oppresses people. It's very, very clear when you hear this story. So I want you to sit back for the next few minutes, and I want you to hear Leila share some more about her story, about herself, and a little bit more about her experience right now on the cross in the desert.
This is a fan-generated show. If you would like to support us, please go to jamieglasshoff.com, and also don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. All your support is greatly appreciated.
Hello. Welcome to Leila Cholak Moment, brought to you by the Glasshoff Gang. Today I want to share with you my views on Islam and tell you a bit more about my experience with Islam in Bosnia. The term Islamophobia, which is exploited by Islamic supremacists to silence criticism of Islam, implies that fearing Islam is irrational, since a phobia is an irrational fear. But fear of Islam is a completely rational and justified fear, precisely because Islam is a dangerous ideology that inspires and sanctions violence and terrorism. And I know this because I have experienced it personally and feel it on my own skin. The religion part is not the issue here. The point is that Islam is a very aggressive and violent ideology that doesn't let you be different from them. If you are different, though, if you have different beliefs and use your own head and your basic human rights as a freedom of speech, you are a threat, and as a threat, you need to be punished or even executed. Talk about religion of peace, right? Islam is an ideology, and ideologies should not be treated like some kind of holy cow. They should be questioned and criticized. Unfortunately, when you do so, you risk to put yourself in physical danger and get threats with rape, burning with fire, and death. So, where is this religion of peace? I'm asking you because I need to see it in order to believe it, and I can't see it. I don't see peace. I don't see tolerance. I don't see understanding. I don't see compassion and accepting another. And everything else that you say Islam is, I just see violence and threats that mostly come from moderate and liberal Muslims. I am aware of that people will be offended by my beliefs and views of reality because it's different from the way most of the people in my country think. But there's a huge difference from being criticized and even insulted. I expected it. I knew what I was getting into. And receiving threats with rape and murder, running over with a car, or getting a bullet in the head. Mirza Djidic from Zenica, a member of Bosnian Army, first sent me a private message on Instagram, writing, "You are just a bitch who doesn't need a dildo, but a huge cock to rape you until your insides fall out." After that, he publicly called for my rape on his Facebook profile, writing, "Is there anyone to rape lovely Leila? I am willing to personally pay him." More info in private messages. And all of that just because of Facebook status, in which I've criticized wearing niqab and burqas. What hurts me the most is that people don't realize it and think that these are just individuals who has nothing to do with Islam. I think it's pretty hypocritical to justify it in a way. Oh, you have a freedom of speech, but that doesn't mean that you should insult someone's religion. By saying so, you automatically justify someone's violence and becoming part of it. Large amounts of people in Bosnia believe that threats with rape and death are not something you should worry and react about. They think it's normal and that you should just let it go. They're expressing their anger, believing that I overreacted and exaggerated the situation. Yeah, I guess I did. I should have probably waited until someone beat me or raped me or give me a bullet in the head and then react. Those of you who are saying that I exaggerate and overreact were never in my skin. You were not offered police protection and advised how to behave in the streets and not to walk alone. You were not in a position in which you had to remove your name and surname from your door in your house in order not to worry if someone will come to look for you. So you really think the country was going to protect me? I had to draw the charges against Mirza Djidic because I started receiving new threats and I was afraid for my safety. Cantonal persecutor told me Mirza Djidic is not going to be punished because, quoting, "just wrote something on Facebook and it's not so serious." Bosnian law says that he could get up to 6 months in prison, but the persecutor said it's not going to happen. So I just had to apologize for even raising charges against him and, quoting, "wasting their precious time." I also doubt that he will lose his job in Bosnia Army. Bosnia has a problem with Islam. Yes, it's true, and I'm sorry if I'm breaking your illusions, but the truth has to be told. The context is very important here. A lot of Bosniaks were killed by Serbs during the war that happened in a period from 1992 to 1995. You know that phenomenon when the victim is becoming the aggressor. It's plain psychology. That's exactly what's going on here. Bosniaks turned themselves to religion, believing that Allah and Islam will save them from another atrocities. But its extreme point of view keeps filling you with hate and strengthening these differences. Bosnia is becoming more radical in past few years. Arabs are coming and buying our land, and politicians are letting them do that. Things are getting radical from the inside, too. And for the first time in Bosnian history, we have Wahhabi politicians and even one woman wearing niqab, a very aggressive uniform that represents oppressive ideology of Islam. This woman, who also hates Serbs, gays, feminists, atheists, communists, Jews, and pretty much everyone who is not Muslim, is running for city council in Zavidovici. This is not about me as Leila, journalist from Sarajevo, anymore. This is about everyone who thinks differently and uses their own head. This is about the freedom of speech and the fact that the freedom of speech in Bosnia obviously exists just in theory. And just to make it clear, yes, freedom of speech is also a right to say something that will make people feel offended. Sorry, but that's what freedom of speech is. And if the other side responds with violence, it's not the persons who share their opinions' fault. I'm just a mirror. I just exposed your own violence. Thank you for watching.
That is Leila Kolak. Just an incredible story, and I admire her courage to speak out. She's not going to let fear and threats stop her from the freedom to speak. And as she mentioned, there in Bosnia, it's just something in theory, because if you try to practice freedom of speech, there are some dire consequences. And once again, this is an example that Islam truly is not a religion of peace. There is no room for opinion or disagreement, as you well heard. And Leila is saying, for those that just criticize me, you need to be in my skin. Did you ever have to change the name on your door out of fear that someone was going to come, recognize your name, and break in and kill you? A very terrifying situation, but I'm very thankful that she's all right. And I admire her courage to not let them stop her from saying what's on her heart and mind. This is the very freedom here in America that's under attack as well. It's under attack because there are politically correct people in charge in lawmaking situations that shouldn't be, and they make havoc for those like Leila and myself for speaking out and having another opinion and another viewpoint. Well, once again, thank you, Annie Cyrus, and Live Up to Freedom for helping out this dear person and giving her the right to speak out. Thank you so much. I want to move on now to a story that just breaks my heart. And I'm talking about Narges Mohammadi. The Iran court has upheld a 16-year prison sentence against human rights activist Narges Mohammadi. What that means is that she will be over 60 years old if and when she is ever allowed to see her children again. And she is now going to suffer even more. She has had some very difficult health issues, and she will only be eligible for release after 10 years. She has two young, beautiful children. Not too long ago, she wrote a very emotional, moving piece about not being able to see her children. And what I want to do is take the time to help you get inside of her world and listen to Narges Mohammadi's heart, prisoner of conscience in Iran. She wrote this from Evin prison on August 4th of last year. But it bears repeating in light of the recent circumstances of her now being sentenced to 16 years in prison. Narges Mohammadi has been in and out of prison for more than a decade simply for supporting human rights in Iran. Now, I want you to hear this personal letter that she wrote from jail on what it means to be apart from her two children. And think about it this way. If you have children, and you are surrounded by their love every day, Think about what it would mean if suddenly they were ripped from your world and you were ripped out of their world and wouldn't be able to see them again. Think about that as you listen to Narges' story. My twins were born on the 28th of November, 2006. I was not allowed to hold my son Ali and my daughter Kiana when they were born because of my poor health. I was only able to see them through the door of the hospital room. It seems as if their fate was to be apart from me from birth. When I held them for the first time, all the scars from the cesarean, the difficulties I had breathing, the fear of death, and all the pain were forgotten. I had become a mother. My dear Kiana was ill and had just returned from hospital when officers from the Ministry of Intelligence came to arrest me. My dear Ali was crying. I placed him on my lap and sang him a lullaby until he fell asleep. Kiana was distressed. I held her. I kissed her. I asked her, "Kiana, dear, why aren't you sleeping?" She says, "I'm not sleepy. I want to be in your arms." The officers told me that we have to go. I had to separate Kiana from myself. She had used all her power and energy to hook her arms around my neck. She was crying loudly. I slowly went down the stairs. I heard her say, "Mother Narges, come and give me a kiss." I returned and gave her a kiss. This happened 3 times. I was listening to the crying sound of my child, who was dearer to me than my own life. Separating myself from her tore my heart to pieces. I was placed in solitary confinement in Section 209 of Evin Prison, Tehran. It was a torture chamber for mothers separated from her ill child. One night I was sleeping in my cell. It was near sunrise. My dear daughter, who would always give the loudest kisses, gave me a kiss on the cheek. I felt her warm body and her small lips on my cheeks. It was Kiana. I opened my arms to hold her close to me. I opened my eyes. It wasn't Kiana. I cried for so many hours. I cried to a point where I thought my tears would soon run out. When Kiana and Ali were 4 years and 2 months old, the security forces broke down the door and entered my house. Kiana was sitting on my lap with her little arms around my neck. She was scared and holding on to me tightly. Ali was extremely excited. He followed the officers and was constantly warning them, "Do not touch my stuff." He would call Kiana and say, "Kiana, come and see. Mr. Conehead is trying to steal our things." They took my husband, Taji, down the stairs. They closed the door, and Kiana's sweet and innocent face rested on the concrete step. She lay down and continued to cry. When Kiana and Ali were 5 months and 5 years old, security forces came to take me to the Ministry of Intelligence. Ali was running around holding his yellow toy gun, saying he wanted to come with me. My dear Kiana held the corner of my dress and said, "Mother, Narges, don't go." With difficulty, I separated myself from the children and left the house while hearing the sound of them cry. I then got in the car with the officers. On 5th of May 2015, my dear Kiana and Ali went to school at 7 a.m. At 8:30 a.m., the security forces were waiting outside the apartment door. "Open the door. You have to come with us." They took me to the general women's ward of Evin Prison. Ali and Kiana left Iran on the 7th. During their last visit, Kiana said, "Mother, while you're not around, we'll go and stay with Taji until you join us." Ali said, "Mother, will you not get sad?" And then looked at me to see my reaction. I tried to portray my happiness without any doubts so they wouldn't be worried about me. "My dear Kiana and Ali will soon leave, and I will be away from them for a while. Dear God, I used to look forward to Sundays and visiting days. On Sunday mornings, I would rush around the prison section. I would gain energy after hearing the sound of the children and feeling their loving presence. In my head, I started to talk to my children. Dear Ali and Kiani, you have every right to leave the country where its leaders does not recognize your rights and your world. How many times will they hurt your small yet innocent hearts and watch you cry as you're separated from your mother, our father? My dear Kiani and Ali, the two of you have faced more suffering in your life than you could possibly imagine. I don't know. Maybe you will feel more comfortable and ease if you live in a society where the love and relationship between a mother and her children is valued and understood, even if I'm not there beside you. I know this separation will be difficult, but I cannot bear to see your hearts, your tears, your fears and insecurities. I would do whatever was in my powers to protect you from any hurt. Oh, dearest of the dearest, please forgive me. The deprivations that the government aimed to impose on me were more so imposed on you. The two of you have faced more suffering in the first 8.5 years of your life than you could possibly imagine. I'm looking at the clock now, and Ali and Kiani's flight have taken off, and I, a mother in pain who is tired of hurt and suffering, has stayed behind. My heart has been torn into hundreds of pieces. My hands, without even trying, face the sky. Dear God, please take my hands and give me the patience I need. For a long time, I won't be able to see their innocent faces. I won't be able to hear their voices. I won't be able to smell them while holding them in my arms. Oh, God, my arms feel so cold and empty without the presence of my children. My hands move toward my chest, which feels as if it's on fire. My cheekbones burn from the tears that run down my face. The lava flowing from my eyes feels like fire from the depths of my heart. These are the intimate thoughts and prayers of Narges Mohammadi, human rights activist sentenced to 16 years in Evin prison, and she will never see her children again for a very, very long time. Please join me on my Facebook page in speaking out and praying and calling for the immediate release of Narges Mohammadi by the Iranian regime who is holding her captive. It's such a very, very sad story. Such a sad story, especially when it involves two children. Right now, I want you to hear from Annie Cyrus from Live Up to Freedom and the Glassov Gang. She was recently interviewed by the Daily Ledger speaking about this nuclear deal and about the Iranian regime. Let's listen to that interview right now on The Cross in the Desert.
Now, what Netanyahu essentially told the United Nations is they are worthless and weak, and he wants the UN to stay out of the way. Israel will handle these situations that they created. In other words, Netanyahu is showing leadership on the world stage. The question is, what will be the response of the Iranian regime? Joining me now from the OANN newsroom, human rights activist who is originally from Iran, now head of Live Up to Freedom, Annie Cyrus. Annie, the Ayatollah obviously in Iran listening to that speech from Benjamin Netanyahu, and God only knows what his response is going to be. But the bottom line is Iran eventually is going to get the bomb and probably would use it. You agree?
I would absolutely agree. This is not a plan that started yesterday. This is a plan that Ayatollah Khomeini started 37 years ago, and they're not about to give it up.
So how does this end, do you think? Is Israel going to have some sort of preemptive strike?
Well, I'm more of a peaceful type of person. However, unfortunately, when it comes to Islamic Republic of Iran's regime, he is absolutely right. We need to push back, and it's not just Israel that needs to push back. We do have to get united. European countries, American countries, North America, all the countries, they need to unite. The first thing is put all the sanctions back in place. The second thing is you have to make serious steps toward the regime, come up with better laws against them. So if they try to move forward, there will be a retaliation, not just from Israel, but the united countries behind Israel.
So, in other words, essentially tear up the agreement that Barack Obama hammered out with the Iranian regime. You've got to go back and put the sanctions back in place and get tough with Iran again.
Well, absolutely. But, however, the money that was handed to Iran cannot be taken back.
Right.
And that on its own was a power that we cannot stop anytime soon. That money is going to get them faster than we can imagine to where they need to be with that nuclear bomb they supposedly not working on, but
and now
we all know they do.
And now there's word that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad might try and run for re-election again and be president. Does that radicalize the country even more? Does that work hand in glove with the Ayatollah?
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly the reason. It's not that he wants to rerun, it's that he has to. He's been ordered by Khamenei, the supreme leader, because they need to get control of the people inside Iran to continue doing what they need to do. So it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when he will be reelected.
And your story, your personal story, is one of abuse when you lived in Iran, then escape. So what is your message now? Are you an American citizen now?
Yes, I am.
What is your message now through your organization to the people of America?
Well, the number one message is what we need to realize is as much as we like to love everyone, and we do, we need to realize there's a separation of government and the people of a country. Me, myself, I'm an American-Iranian person, and I love all Iranians. However, we need to stand up when it comes to the regime of Iran, and the main part of it is the Islamic laws that comes with the regime. Now, not only we're not standing up to them, we're also opening the doors for them to come into our country, which is the best country when it comes to freedom and constitution. So my message always is, please try to get educated on what we're getting ourselves into. And then as we, the people, stand up and demand better solutions to the problem.
For example, we talk on this program repeatedly that Islam is not just a religion, it is an ideology. It is a way of life. So in your opinion, as an American, and as we look at our Constitution, does Islam deserve First Amendment protection? Because if you really practice Islam and Sharia law, it is completely counter to the United States Constitution.
Well, basically, Islam cannot coexist with anything, not just our Constitution, anything. Because Islam is about dictating every step of every day of your life. So not only I agree with the fact that it shouldn't, the First Amendment should not apply to Islam, I also believe that we should focus more on the ideology part of it than the religion part of it.
I think that listening to folks like you would help our federal government and, for that matter, our law enforcement, because we have to do something differently in this country. The way we are dealing with radical Islam right now is clearly not working. Annie, thank you.
And that was Annie Cyrus from Live Up to Freedom and being interviewed on the Daily Ledger, really outlining the dangers of any association with the Islamic Republic of Iran, this nuclear deal, this giving up millions and billions of dollars in sanction relief money to the Islamic Republic of Iran will result in funding of more terrorism. And as Annie pointed out, as an Iranian-American human rights activist, we need to stand up against the Islamic laws that will try to enslave everyone, and especially the Iranian people who are treated contemptuously with great terror and torture every day living in Iran. I thank her so much for using her freedom as an Iranian-American to stand up for freedom here as an American citizen. I want you to hear this incredible song from Chris Tomlin's CD, Hello Love. It's going to set up the little Bible study I'm going to have with you here in a few minutes. This is the story of the great story, that is, of Jesus Messiah right here on the cross in the desert. Let's listen. Tomlin from his CD, Hello Love, an incredible song talking about Jesus, Messiah. I want to spend some time with you in our closing minutes. We began the program today talking about how our God rescues us in our time of distress, in our time of pain and sorrow. And I want to end the program today going to the Word of God, to Mark's Gospel, and the story of Jesus bringing hope, healing, and freedom to a young demon-possessed boy. The name of this program is The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. And while it is about human rights, it's also speaking about the hope and the freedom that Jesus brings. I want to read to you this morning from Mark chapter 9, starting at verse 11. And I want you to hear this amazing story, at verse 14. When they returned to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd surrounding them, and some teachers of religious law were arguing with them. When the crowd saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with awe, and they ran to greet him. "What is all this arguing about?" Jesus asked. One of the men in the crowd spoke up and said, "Teacher, I brought my son so you could heal him. He is possessed by an evil spirit that will not let him talk. And whenever this spirit seizes him, it throws him violently to the ground. Then he foams at the mouth and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast out the evil spirit, but they couldn't do it." Jesus said to them, "You faithless people, how long must I be with you? How long must I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought the boy. But when the evil spirit saw Jesus, it threw the child into a violent convulsion, and he fell to the ground, writhing and foaming at the mouth. "How long has this been happening?" Jesus asked the boy's father. He replied, "Since he was a little boy. The spirit often throws him into the fire or into water, trying to kill him. Have mercy on us and help us if you can." "What do you mean, if I can?" Jesus asked. "Anything is possible if a person believes." The father instantly cried out, "I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief." When Jesus saw that the crowd of onlookers was growing, he rebuked the evil spirit. "Listen, you spirit that makes this boy unable to hear and speak," he said. "I command you to come out of this child and never enter him again." Then the spirit screamed and threw the boy into another violent convulsion and left him. The boy appeared to be dead. A murmur ran through the crowd as people said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and helped him to his feet, and he stood up. Afterward, when Jesus was alone in the house with his own disciples, they asked him, "Why couldn't we cast out that evil spirit?" Jesus replied, "This kind can be cast out only." Jesus demonstrates that God is the God of impossible situations. Jesus demonstrates in this beautiful story in the Gospel of Mark that he has authority over the demonic realm. There is an unseen realm of demonic spirits that have only one intention, and that is to destroy humanity. When they were cast out of heaven, one third of them fell to earth, and one third of them have been there. When Jesus comes on the scene, though, it's a whole different story, because he demonstrates that, unlike what the Muslims teach, he is much more than a prophet. He has authority over the unclean world of spirits. He has authority over life and death. He has authority over death. He can raise the dead. He can forgive sin. He receives worship. And in this situation, we see that the disciples were unable to do what Jesus had given them the ability and authority to do. Remember, in the story of the Gospels, Jesus equips and empowers his disciples to go and teach the good news of the kingdom of God and to do what he does. But for some reason, in their lack of faith or in whatever they were doing that seemed to keep them from doing what they were commissioned to do, and Jesus later says, "This kind only comes out by prayer." Apparently, the disciples were so busy arguing about what to do and how to do it that they lacked the real faith and the real prayer-felt heart to do what Jesus told them they could do. This is a beautiful story of deliverance. The teaching about evil spirits, there's a lot of that that goes on today, and a lot of it is false. A lot of it is too much preoccupation with Satan and too much focus on evil spirits. And the balance is this. We know that there are demonic spirits that want to torment us, but Christ has come, and by his authority and by his lordship, and these demonic spirits don't stand a chance to do anything to Christians or unbelievers, because Jesus demonstrates his great power over the demonic world in this situation. What I find so interesting in this story is the story of the father, who explains in detail about how this spirit has been tormenting his son since birth. And then he comes to Jesus. He says, "Please help us if you can. If you can." And Jesus corrects him. He says, "Sir, everything, anything is possible to the person that believes." Now, it's very careful. We want to be very careful about what he means here. All things are possible to him that believes. The faith that Jesus is talking about is not some mental state of mind, not some positive affirmation. He's talking about anything is possible to him that believes, and the focus of that belief is in Christ as Jesus, the Messiah. That faith is to be in him to do what your heart is crying out for you to be done. That faith is placed in Christ. It's very carefully placed there. And you notice that Jesus rebukes the evil spirit, and the spirit leaves. This man says something in this context that's very interesting. He says, "Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief." We've all been there. We struggle in our walk of faith, And yet, if we're honest before God, we struggle in our unbelief. You know, that's human beings. We tend to say, I believe, but then we struggle with doubt. And this man represents so many of us. So instead of being harsh on him for not having, if you will, faith, he struggles with his belief. This story is very important because it shows us as human beings, as Christians, that we too struggle in our faith. We too struggle with our unbelief. And notice that Jesus does not rebuke him when he says, help my unbelief. Jesus is compassionate and understanding of the frailty of this man, of the struggle of this man. He understands the torture and the torment that this man has been going through. And so Jesus doesn't correct him and say, you faithless human being. He demonstrates to this man that even in our struggle with faith, even in our unbelief, that God is not bound by that. But God sovereignly moves into our situation in spite of our struggle with faith and does what the God of compassion and love does, and that is to bring hope and deliverance. And at this man being honest really helps you and me. We struggle. We want to have faith, but yet we have doubts, and we struggle with that. And it's good to see that this story, this beautiful story, is an encouragement to you and me who struggle every day with our faith. We see the evil around us. We have questions. We want to have faith. We want to walk and trust in God. But we struggle as human beings when we see so many things contrary to God's will and God's word. And we feel overwhelmed sometimes by the evil that surrounds us. This evil was present in this man's life. It was torturing this man's son. And they had no hope. They were suffering with hopelessness and despair. But when Jesus comes, that hopelessness and that despair vanishes away because the God of the impossible has arrived on the scene. And he has come to bring hope and deliverance. He has come to bring hope for our unbelief, to help us in our struggle of faith. And Jesus comes to reassure us, it's okay, you're human, I understand your dilemma. And he shows up on the scene, and he comes to this man, and he reassures him he is well able to do what this man is crying out for. He is the hope. He is the deliverance for those oppressed. He is the hope. And he is the deliverance for people like Narges Mohammadi, suffering in prison, alienated from her family and her two sons, her two children. He is the hope and the deliverance for those that are suffering. This story reminds us that in our struggle for faith and belief, Jesus responds with compassion and understanding. And today, if you have a situation similar to this man, and you are struggling, you are crying out to God, it's okay to say, believe, but help my unbelief. It's okay to be honest because God understands your dilemma. He understands your situation. And he has come on the scene. Jesus has arrived. He is your deliverance today. He is your hope today. You see, we tend to look at sometimes these stories in the gospel as things that happened thousands of years ago, but they don't happen today. But our God reminds us that he is the same yesterday, today, and forever, and that he will never leave or forsake us. He is the God of unconditional love and compassion. And so what happened almost 2,000 years ago still happens today. I remember reading that psalm to you. Thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter of my head. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who set themselves against me round about. This beautiful story in the gospel is a reminder that our God is a refuge. Our God is a strength. Our God is a help and a hope in the time of need, and that he brings deliverance. He brings freedom. And this is my message this morning to you. Maybe you don't have a demon-possessed son, but you have a critical trial in your life. You feel completely trapped and suffocated by the anxiety, the stress, and the fear. Your God is here to deliver you. Jesus is here to set you free, to deliver you from this pain and this torture, because he's a God whose lives are precious to him. Your life is precious to him. He is the God of hope, the God of healing, and the God of deliverance. I want to thank you so much today for joining me on this very special episode of The Cross in the Desert. Please continue to remember Layla in Bosnia in your prayers, that she is protected from the threats of Islam, that she can live a normal life without fear. Please speak out and pray for Narges Mohammadi, who is suffering in prison, separated from her family and children. Please pray for her release, for her freedom. Thank you so much for joining me today. I will see you this Thursday again on The Cross in the Desert. Have yourself an incredible week, and God bless you.
Where the great of wrath are so